Well, last Sabbath, we were all at home doing the same thing, sitting and logging on to services from headquarters. And it was quite different from the feast for those who were able to go to the feast. Because at the feast for 8 days, we were all together. And we had fellowshipping every day. But not everyone was able to experience the feast that way this year. Many were at home, had to stay at home because of COVID or because of other issues. And so when they heard sermons at the feast to rejoice, or when they received cards from people saying, "Have a happy feast," not everyone was rejoicing. It was different. It was different for them. But not only that, it was also difficult for a number of people to rejoice even at the feast. Now, for us, we really enjoyed it because our grandkids were there. Two of our grandkids and their parents. I got to mention their parents, but our grandkids. And our wife's parents, they were there. So we had a lot of time together. And we were able to sit together at the feast, all during the feast. And we were sad. We were sad that we had to leave. But not everyone, even at the feast, had those experiences. They didn't. Some were alone for the first time. Some had bad health issues even at the feast and were suffering. Some had to go home early because they didn't feel well and they didn't know what they were coming down with. And others received news from family and friends who were going through severe trials at home. Some of their relatives were going through terrible trials, or we were hearing they and others were hearing other news from other feast sites that was very discouraging. And so they were not able to have as much rejoicing as maybe a number of us were able to rejoice. And now that we've been back for a while, and as we heard last week, we're going to be experiencing further trials as we go through life. We don't know what kind of difficulties we're going to go through. But if anything was like this last year, I believe we're going to have some things to deal with. And the one fact is that they will come. Difficulties will come. Let's notice 1 Peter 4, verse 12. 1 Peter 4 and verse 12. And notice how Paul addresses the members. He calls them beloved. He's very concerned. He's not chiding them. He's just an outward sign here saying, "Beloved, do not think it strange concerning the fiery trial which is to try you." It will try you, but don't think it strange, as though some strange thing was happening to you. Some are going to face financial difficulties. I know of one person who lost his job right before the feast. I don't know how he's going to deal with that since he's been back home. He was very positive that he'd get a job, but he wasn't going to have the job that he had right before the feast. Some are going to face health issues. Some are going to face issues at work or at school. Some of us will probably face some persecution from other sources. And more than likely, some of us are going to go through some grieving. So when Peter says, "Beloved," he's concerned. He's saying, don't think it a strange concerning the fiery trial Then verse 13. We're told to do something that seems to be so out of the ordinary, but rejoice to the extent that you partake of Christ's sufferings, that when his glory is revealed, you may also be glad with exceeding joy. That's at the time of his return. But we're told to rejoice. That's not easy to do. You know, Jesus Christ suffered a lot on this earth. And he was the Son of God. And he was perfect. And he was full of God's Spirit. And he had to deal with religious persecution day in and day out. And he had to flee through crowds because his time had not yet come. But he eventually then had to yield and give his life. It wasn't easy for him. And whatever suffering we're going to go through is not going to be really easy. And yet, we are told to rejoice. In fact, there are three more scriptures that tell us that same thing. Let's notice them. 1 Peter 1, verse 6. 1 Peter 1 and verse 6. In this you greatly rejoice. So not only to rejoice, you greatly rejoice. You rejoice, though now for a little while, if need be, you've been grieved by various trials. Grieved means distressed, but greatly rejoice. Look what the Apostle Paul wrote in Romans 5. Romans 5 and verse 3. Romans 5 and verse 3. Not only that, but we also glory in tribulations. We glory in them. It seems incongruous. Rejoice. Greatly rejoice. We glory in them. It's almost like, oh yes. Enjoy them so much. But notice one more. James 1 verse 2. James 1 verse 2. James 1 verse 2. My brethren, count it all joy. You have rejoice. You have greatly rejoice. You have glory. Glory in trials. And now we have count it all joy when you fall into various trials. These are trials that just happen. You accidentally get into them. Or they just come up. They're not planned. And I don't think any of us are going around thinking which hole we could fall into to experience a trial. We try to stay away from those holes. We try not to fall into something. We're trying to be very careful. But these trials do happen, and we're to count it all joy. So in the sermon, let's see if we can better understand what the Apostle Paul and what the Apostle James and the Apostle Peter admonished us to do. And the title of the sermon is Facing Trials with Joy. So this past week, I was getting my back murdered by the chiropractor. And as he's just really hammering my back, he says, okay, Pastor John, what are you going to speak on this Sunday? And I had to remind him, I don't speak on Sunday, I speak Saturday. Oh, yeah, that's right, that's when you speak. So what are you going to speak on? And I said, well, I'm considering speaking on the fact that how to rejoice in trials. And he was real quiet. And he said, you know, that's very hard to do. I agreed with him. It's very hard to do. How do you do that? And then we went on to another topic. But before we get into that answer of how do you do this, it's very important that we begin to look at some absolutes. Absolutes that we will all experience no matter what the trial. We will all experience these absolutes. And these absolutes are found in one section of 1 Corinthians 10, verse 12 to 14. Let's look at 1 Corinthians 10, verse 12 to 14. You might want to put a marker there because we will be coming back to this chapter a couple of times. And I'm going to be reading from the Amplified Version. So what we have, what most of you have, is the New King James Version. I'll be quoting from the Amplified Version. So I want to quote from verse 12. And in the Amplified Version, it brings out some more details. So I quote, "Therefore, let the one who thinks he stands immune to temptation, being overconfident and self-righteous, take care that he does not fall into sin and condemnation." Unquote. I want to focus on that phrase, "Therefore, let the one who thinks he stands firm," thinks he's immune to temptation because he's overconfident. The first absolute is no one is immune to trials. No one. I've heard people say, "I've never gotten sick." And you mentally recoil and you think, "Oh, don't say that. Don't say that." And usually when someone says it, it's in a very proud way. Or others have said, "I've always been able to find work to take care of my family." Oh, don't say it that way. Oh, do you know what you're saying? And you wish you could pull those words back from what was just said. These types of comments are stated usually in a very dogmatic, arrogant manner. For instance, they're not stated as, "You know, I am so thankful. I am so thankful that God has been merciful to me in that I have not had a lot of sickness in my life." Do you see the difference? "I'm so thankful that I've not had a lot of sickness." Instead of, "I've never gotten sick." Or, "I'm so thankful he has blessed me with work to take care of my family. He's always done that for me." So the emphasis is not on the self, but on praising God and thanking God for everything he did. Because if we're not careful, the one who thinks he stands immune to temptation. He's overconfident. And when trial comes along, he could get blown away. The point is, no matter how perfectly or righteously we live our lives, look at the example of Job. Even the Apostle Paul. They suffered seriously in their lives. We're going to face suffering. Now, Jesus was truly perfect. And yet, we know how much he suffered. So we need to recognize as an absolute that trials will come. And as you noticed, probably noticed more this past week than in past weeks, the prayer requests that are coming in. And these are serious issues. But we're only seeing the tip of the iceberg. There are a number of other people who are going through severe suffering in all kinds of ways, not only just from COVID, but from other terrible illnesses or other situations in their lives that they have not put out publicly, privately maybe among some of their close friends. But we know of a number of people who are going through severe issues. And they all need our prayers. They all need our encouragement. And Satan is out there causing havoc and causing chaos. And he's going to be pushing and pushing that to the point that we could fall into a situation that we had not planned for and have to experience some very difficult times. So that's the first absolute. Recognize that no one is immune from a trial. Let's notice the second absolute. This is in verse 13. And again, I quote from the Amplified version here. And we'll look at the first section, the first part of this verse. And I quote, "No temptation, regardless of its source, has overtaken or enticed you that is not common to the human experience. Nor is any temptation unusual or beyond human resistance." So what that absolute is that no temptation has overtaken you that is not common to our existence as humans. The first part of this verse is saying that the trials we face are often the trials that others have faced. It's not like we're the only ones going through something unique. Even though we are individuals, and even though there are individual situations, the trial overall is the same as what other people have faced. Now let's look at this one example of the commonality of a trial. And this is found in Ecclesiastes 12. So let's look at Ecclesiastes 12. And we'll read a couple of comments here that King Solomon wrote. And we'll discuss some of this from what the Jewish Talmud brings out about these particular verses. Ecclesiastes 12, verse 1. "Remember now your Creator in the days of your youth, before the difficult days come." Now, we just had the blessing of little children. And there's the youth among us. "Remember now your Creator in the days of your youth." For those who are young, are we doing that? Are we establishing a habit of remembering God every single day in our youth? We have to develop that habit now while we are young, because difficult days are coming, as we'll see. If we have the habit when we're young, we're going to continue it into the difficult days ahead. "Remember now your Creator before the difficult days come and the years draw near when you say, 'I have no pleasure in them.'" I have no pleasure in them. You know what happens when we're young? We don't stay young. We grow older. And with age comes difficulties, to the point that some people have told me and have told others, don't get old. Don't get old. Because of all the difficulties that come along. And as you get older, you begin to realize you don't have the energy and the strength, even the mental thinking, and the memory, and the be able to remember names and things like that, and remember where you put your note that you were supposed to remember what you wrote on the note, and then couldn't even find the note. These things happen. When I was younger, I thought, oh, that's not going to happen. And they, oh, I shouldn't have said that. It happens. Here is an absolute. An absolute. We've got to keep God in the forefront of our thinking because we will age. All of us do. And yet we will still need to remember God. The absolute is that in this case, everybody goes through something that's common. We all get old or older. Some cope very well. We know of a member who is 99 years old, and she walks every day with her daughter. And there was a picture of her that we saw that she had walked out to the beach in the sand. You know how difficult that is to walk in the sand, especially when you're 99? She was able to do it, and she was able to do it. Others haven't even lived that long. It's not a sad place to go into a nursing home. It's not a happy place. It's a very sad place. I should say it's a very sad place to go into a nursing home. It's not a happy place. Especially when you see so many people unable to move, unable to walk. So not everyone copes well, but there is the commonality, is old age. And we're looking at this one instance. Solomon discusses what some of those issues are in old age. So let's look at verse 3. In the day when the keepers of the house tremble, the strong men bow down, the grinders cease because they are few, and those that look through the windows grow dim. So there's some imagery here that the Jewish Talmud brings out, is that the keepers could be like the ribs, the chest, that keep the body, to keep it stable. And the arms and the hands. And it says here that in the day when the keepers of the house tremble, they start to shake. There's a very fine member in the Pennsylvania area when we were there for about 8 years, in the Lancaster area, actually, Harrisburg, Lancaster. He had Parkinson's, and he came to church every week. And he was able to talk, he was able to follow along in the scriptures, but he could not control the trembling of his arms. He wished he could, but he couldn't. And that was his trial that he was going through. But he was a very positive man. It talks about the strong men, and the strong men bow down. The strong men could be referring to the legs. They're not as strong anymore. You can't go out and run anymore. You're just barely shuffling along. They become weak. The grinders are referring to the teeth. And as you get old, more and more teeth begin to come loose. And you have to have either partials or other things to help you chew. They become few. Those who look through the windows, it's referring to the eyes, growing weak. This is old age of what happens. Verse 4. When the doors are shut in the streets and the sound of grinding is low, when one rises up at the sound of a bird and all the daughters of music are brought low. Again, according to the Talmud, the doors could be referring to the ears. To the ears. And so the sounds are lower due to age, impaired hearing. And it is frustrating. And when you can't hear as good, and you have to say what? That's been my most prominent word here recently is what? What? And I probably should get something tuned up. But anyway, the point is impaired hearing comes along. Now, verse 5. Let's look at verse 5. They are afraid of height. and if terror is in the way, when the almond tree blossoms and the grasshopper is a burden, desire fails. A man goes to his eternal home, which would be the grave, and the mourners go about the streets. And so, again, according to the Talmud, it could be terrors referring to the inability to walk and afraid of falling. How many older people have we known who are afraid of going out anywhere because they don't want to fall? They're very careful about that. One fall can really cause grave difficulty, especially if it's a broken hip or a broken knee. And so it talks about the desire failing. Could be also a desire for food, desire for appetite. It's all diminished. And then comes where the mourners come. This has happened decade after decade after decade. The point is, this happens to everyone. This is a common trial. Some have different aspects of it, but it's the same thing. It's the growing older. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. It's just the reality of the issue. So we have similar trials. We have aging, dealing with death, dealing with health-related issues, and of course, all the other trials that people face. There is a commonality. But again, it's important that each of us deals with individual circumstances because we're all individual. So someone who's growing older may have Parkinson's, whereas another one who's growing older may have cancer. It's still the commonality of a health issue and also of growing older. For one, it may be a job loss. For another, it may be being underpaid and not being accepted and being taken advantage of and not being able to pay the bills as much as you'd like. The similarity is a financial issue, but it's a little bit different with each individual. Family issues could be dealing with children who have either taken advantage or who have just neglected, or dealing with parents who are having to go through hospice. All different issues, but there would be what you call the commonality of a family issue and dealing in that way, in dealing with that way. So what we're seeing in Corinthians is that absolute, as we saw back in verse 13, that it's common to man. It is common to man. But let's now go to verse 13 and read the last part of that verse. And again, from the Amplified version. But God is faithful to his word. He's compassionate and trustworthy, and he will not let you be tempted beyond your ability to resist, but along with the temptation he has in the past and is now, and will always provide the way out as well, so that you will be able to endure it without yielding and will overcome temptation with joy. And that's the Amplified version of that verse. It adds quite a bit to it. The absolute is that God does intervene and has done for many times. We may be dealing with serious issues, but he won't allow that temptation to overtake us to the point where we don't have the ability to resist. In other words, he won't give us any temptation that would come upon us beyond our ability to resist whatever comes along. He gives us a way out. He always gives us a way out. It may take time. It may take years. It may take a lot of energy on our part. But God is there to help us. He is not there to destroy us. He's there to help us. He doesn't want to destroy us. Now again, keep our place there in Corinthians, and let's notice Psalm 34, verse 19, because this ties in with that absolute. Psalm 34, verse 19. Many are the afflictions of the righteous, but the Lord delivers him out of them all. That is what we have to recognize about God. He will deliver us. But he also says there are trials of the righteous. Trials of the righteous. I mean, you look at verse 17, the righteous cry out and the Lord hears and delivers them out of all their troubles. Now, he does it in different ways and at different times. Sometimes you wish he would have intervened sooner. I know in my own life there have been times that I have wondered, why is this happening? What is going on? How could God be allowing this to happen? I don't understand this. And I'm talking about some serious issues that had come upon me, a trial that came upon me, and I wondered, why is this going on? Where's the deliverance? I wasn't bearing up well, I'll say that. But Psalm 34 is accurate, and so is 1 Corinthians 10:13. It is accurate, and it is an absolute. Because looking back, I could see where God always gave me strength to be able to endure it and get through it. God also knows how much we can handle at any one time. Notice what the Apostle Paul faced concerning one of his fellow servants. Philippians 2, verse 25. Philippians 2, verse 25. Philippians 2, verse 25. Notice this story. I considered it necessary to send you Epaphroditus, my brother, fellow worker, and fellow soldier, but your messenger and the one who ministered to my need. So here we see this relationship between the Apostle Paul, who is in prison. He's writing this from prison. And we see his friend who helped him. But this friend of his, Epaphroditus, was also a messenger, or the one who dealt with the Philippian brethren on behalf of Paul. Since he was longing for you all and was distressed because you heard that he was sick. So here, the one who was working with that congregation there, they found out he was sick. And they were distressed over his sickness. And notice what Paul wrote. He was sick almost unto death. You know, this is found in Philippians 2, where often we would look at verse 5 and talk about the mind that was in Jesus Christ being you. But you have this other story at the end of the chapter that shows this deep emotional discussion that Paul has with the brethren. And he was sick unto death. He almost died. We were wondering if he was going to die. But God had mercy on him. And notice this statement, and not only on him, but on me also, lest I should have sorrow upon sorrow. It's interesting. Paul is saying, of course, we don't want anything to happen to Epaphroditus, but this would be sorrow upon sorrow. This would be like overwhelming. Overwhelming. And so, therefore, I send him the more eagerly that when you see him again, you may rejoice and I may be less sorrowful. I may be less sorrowful. I'm just wondering if God knew all that Paul had gone through, and Paul was in prison, went ahead and healed Epaphroditus, so he would not sorrow upon sorrow. So it was a blessing both for Epaphroditus and for Paul. And the word in verse 28, or the phrase in verse 8, that I may be less anxious. Less anxious. I don't know, one wonders when you read through that section there. Okay, let's go back to 1 Corinthians 10. And notice one other absolute that we need to keep in mind. And these are all regarding trials that come along. 1 Corinthians 10, and let's look at verse 14. There in the New King James, it says, "Therefore, my beloved, flee from idolatry." Now, let me read this again from the Amplified Version, which says, "Therefore, my beloved," again, this phrase, he's concerned for the members. "My beloved, run, keep far, far away from any sort of idolatry. And that includes loving anything more than God or participating in anything that leads to sin and enslaves the soul." So it adds quite a bit to that verse. We have to do our part. That's the absolute. If we're deliberately going against God's will and His law, we are going to have problems. The Bible has chapters, Leviticus 26, Deuteronomy 28, I think it is, that talk about the blessings and the cursings. If you follow God, these are the blessings that will come. If you don't, you're going to have difficulties. You're going to have severe difficulties. If we're going deliberately against God, we're going to suffer some consequences. Sure, we're human, and we all make mistakes. And yet, when we do, we repent because we want to be back close to God. But our approach is to run away from the idols, anything that is contrary to God, because that would have consequences that could add some trials that we don't need. For example, there's this new smartphone out there. They always have new ones out there. Everybody has a new one. You can't find the newest new one because you're always going to have somebody who's going to have another new one. And so, I got to get this. I'll just dig into that money and I'll send a little bit more tithe next time. God says His tithe money comes first. So what would this running away from idolatry be like? Is something that we could look at is if we would take tithe money and buy a smartphone instead of sending God His tithe. It's something to consider, and you can extrapolate that into any of the commandments of God, whatever it is. We have to do our part. We have to do our part. So let's summarize for a moment. It's important to understand that there are some absolutes regarding trials. Number one, no one is immune from them. Number two, the trials we face are common to all. Of course, with individual situations and circumstances. Number three, God knows us, and He will give us strength to cope. And number four, we got to do our part in running away from sin. Now, knowing and believing in these absolutes is just one aspect in helping us face trials. But what's the answer about rejoicing, much rejoicing, glory in trials, have lots of joy? Let's look at another reality. Hebrews 12, verse 11. Hebrews 12, verse 11. Hebrews 12, verse 11. Now no chastening or any discipline seems to be joyful for the present, but painful. Now we read four verses that say to rejoice in trials. And here you have a situation that's involving a chastening. And here you have an admission that's not joyful. It's painful. It's difficult. It's not joyous. We would all say that. And yet earlier we saw we are to rejoice. So how are we going to do that? When we're told it's difficult, how do we reconcile those concepts? How are we to do both? How are we to be joyful in a very joyless situation? Well, one of the answers actually follows. And notice this phrase. Nevertheless, afterward, it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. Nevertheless, afterward, it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. This is talking about afterwards, but I would suggest in the midst of a trial, we probably ought to ask ourselves. See, after a trial, it's a time where we can reflect back on what we had just gone through and what we could learn from it. But it shows that the trial will yield the peaceable fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. We are in training. We've heard that time and time again. We are in training. We are in class every Sabbath. We live our lives in training to obey God. We are continually having to deal with this world and with all the issues that come up. Because God did not call us for our own salvation, but to help others when they're brought into the millennial rule of Christ, and to help others in the second resurrection. If we've never had to go through the issues of life that these people will have been going through, could we truly understand what they were going through and how we can help and encourage them to seek God and turn to God? We are in training. And God wants to see the peaceable fruit of righteousness being developed. We are to be teachers in the future. Our trials help us to rely on God. They help us to build patience. They help us to continue to serve God day in, day out, week after week, keeping His Sabbath and His holy days as we are physically able to do that. We need to think of our calling and why we are called. It's to serve Jesus Christ forever, and what our focus has to be. Our focus is to learn something. And instead of waiting until the end when you look back and reflect, it'd be good to go through it thinking about it now. What am I learning here to help someone else? There's the old adage that there's nothing more encouraging and helpful than to share something with other people, to help other people. Because the emphasis is not on the self, but is on someone else. A care and concern for someone else. Is that what we think about? Well, this verse gives us an indication it's something we could and should be considering. Reflect. Reflect. And learn. And use that training so that we can help other people. So what do we do? What do we do? Verse 12. Therefore, strengthen the hands that hang down and the feeble knees. When people are going through difficulties, you feel wiped out. You feel discouraged. And it's almost like you slump your shoulders and hang your arms down and your knees buckle and you just have no energy. The mental capabilities are just slow. What the writer is saying here, this is what you've got to do. You have to stand up straight. Stand up straight no matter what the burden. It could be heavy. The body could be debilitated physically. The mind could have difficulties. But you have to, with the help of God, stand up straight. And not only that, don't let your forward movement be thwarted. As it says there, make straight paths for your feet so that what is lame may not be dislocated but rather be healed. Don't let whatever is causing you difficulties to be left in a state of dislocation. Do what you can to move forward. That's what we're told to do. Don't let your forward movement be thwarted. Verse 14. Pursue peace with all people and holiness, without which no one will see the Lord. So not only do we stand up, we realize that we've got some heavy burdens on us, but we go forward. And to realize we have a mission and a purpose in life to pursue peace with all people. And, as it says here, holiness, which means obedience to God. That is how we rejoice in a trial. We have purpose. And we have the ability to go forward because God is there to help us. It is a mental determination we make that we are not going to stand by and have our dislocated bodies just doing nothing, but we're going to go forward into the healing process. So there's some wordplay here and some analogies that one could look at. The main point is a goal, and that goal is to seek peace with people, and as we saw earlier, we are in training to learn lessons from what we're going through. But before we conclude, or we will conclude with this one verse, in John 15, we need help. We need help to rejoice, greatly rejoice, be full of joy, and glory. So where does that help come from? Well, the words that we're going to see here in John 15, verse 9 to 11, are the words that Jesus Christ spoke right before he was arrested. And notice what he said here, verse 9. As the Father loved me, I've loved you. Abide in my love. So Jesus is saying, the Father has loved me. And Jesus is saying to his disciples, I've loved you. And Jesus is saying, abide now in my love. Now, what is his love? Verse 10, if you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. And Jesus obeyed God. He never sinned. These things, verse 11, I have spoken to you, that my joy may remain in you and that your joy may be full. When we're told to be joyful and to rejoice and to glory, that is the joy that is given to us by God the Father through Jesus Christ to us. And so we have to ask help. Because Christ was now going to go through the worst trial of his life to give up his life for all of us, which he did. And he did it with joy. Well, God gave him that ability to do that. And God and Christ are giving us that ability in our trials. Remember this, that God loves Christ, Christ loves us, and it is in his joy that gives us the joy and the ability to rejoice in any of the trials we may come across.